Let's talk corn. You ready? All right, we're ready to talk corn. First things first. You didn't ask questions up front. So we're going to buy you. Actually, Paul Cooley is going to buy you. This is one of Paul's favorite things. So anybody who asks a question, if you need a little chocolate, or a lot of chocolate in this case, we'll bring a chocolate bar out to you. So if you ask a question, you get a chocolate bar. Thanks to Paul Cooley for that. Okay, the corn panel. You know all the folks up here, right? This is pretty simple. He's got a you got a question already? Criminy, you must be hungry. Can you wait or you don't want to do it now? Are you ready? What's your question? So the question is, how many times is the 350? You know what? We'll let that one start. The question is, how many times will the 350 million bushels that keeps disappearing and then coming back and then disappearing again and coming back come back to haunt us? Let's introduce the folks that are up on stage first. Dan Zwicker is with us. He's from ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois. He's on Thursdays. Paul Cooley next to him on Wednesday with ADM Investor Services. Pete Manhart from Normal, Illinois. And Bates Commodities is with us. And you're on Tuesday mornings. And on Friday morning, you can hear Jackie Fakes of Stuart Peterson. So, Paul, you want to deal with the 350 million bushels that keeps coming around and then disappearing and then coming around again?
First of all, I want to thank WILL for having this annual meeting. And Todd, you have to be the Best Dressed Man of the Year award, and I'd love to buy that tie you have on.
Well, I will get, you know what, my wife will pay you to take the tie. Every time I buy orange and blue ties, I only have a couple of them. But if I buy an orange and blue tie, she always looks at me and she says, "Are you going to wear that when we're out together?" No. The answer is no.
And my good friend over to the far right, Mr. Dave Dickey, and I think we would at least give Todd $10 or $12 for that tie, don't you imagine?
Hey, sold. Dickey's going to give me $50 for my tie. It's about 10 years old, Dave, so that's good.
Also, I need to say a special thanks for Mr. Ron Grossman from our Chicago ADM Investors offices that's here. And Kurt Johnson, also with our ADM Investors Group, Scott Harms, Tim Smith, Mark Soderberg, an old friend, Brad Tucker, that was with our office down there at Oakland for a long, long time. And one of the things I have to reminisce one more time about, we have a young lady in our Oakland office that used to give the hourly market reports on WILL from Cargill, Tuscola, Kathy Hanners, and she's works for our company as a grain merchandiser. And I can remember when I was a kid sitting on a 930 case tractor listening to the market reports, and Kathy was giving them, and that was the best way we got the markets in central Illinois and Indiana and the Midwest, was on WILL.
You know, we started giving numbers in 1935. Was that when you were on the tractor?
Okay. The big thing that... Also, I have to give a special award to Matt Bennett for the best suntan. And also, Wayne, thanks for my tie. Yeah, there we go. Okay. The big factor here is that your question is very appropriate. And I heard through the grapevine that Mike Zuzulo said that whenever he's at a market meeting, the government reports are the most disliked thing that farmers hear about, and here we are talking about them again at this particular time. We do know that we have a carryover on the last USDA report of 801 million bushels. This is 327 million bushels under last year's production carryover, and we saw the corn basis just absolutely explode last year. And this year we're seeing an inverse carry in the market, and I didn't hear the cash grain panel talk about that, you know, this inverse carry with the March futures. And it was well publicized that the carryover in corn was going to be extremely tight this year. And my hunch is, with the corn yields that I heard about from my customers, the government probably has the yield per acre pretty well right. And the think tank people that I have the most confidence in thinks that the corn usage is going to be dropped with ethanol about 50 million and the corn exports up 50. And I think the corn stocks are going to be within 25 million bushels, probably less than the USDA's numbers. The 350 million bushels, I'm going to take the Darryl Good approach. I think they just disappeared in thin air.
They're gone. All right. You know what? They didn't talk about the inverse, but I guess, like, do I get a D? Because I didn't ask.
Well, you know, you're an A. You're still the best dressed guy here. So.
Yeah, thanks. You didn't give me a grade on my questions, just a grade on my dress. I appreciate that, Paul. Okay, the 350 million. Pete?
You have to remember, a government report's just like a fence post. Once it's set, we deviate off of it. And if you got in trouble, like when I was a kid, when you got in trouble, Dad made you move the fence post over 3 feet, quarter mile. I mean, so fence posts get moved by the government every report. And it's a new place for us and the rest of the world to deviate off of. The numbers that they talked about, they're all over the place. I mean, you got estimates here, estimates there. And I don't know if any of those people know any more about it than you do. I'm still of the opinion that we didn't have piles this year. You didn't have to wait in long lines, so we don't have as much corn as they said we did. I don't know if that'll come to be or not. I'm also of the opinion that where did 300 million in feeding go? So those are estimates from bean counters somewhere, and I don't know that they know how to count beans, let alone corn.
Jackie?
Little one corn, huh? I don't know. I guess when I look at the USDA reports, one of the things that we seem to miss, and Pete brought it up a little bit, is that every report has a deviation on it. We heard a lot of talk about 164 bushel to the acre trend line yield. At this time of year, the deviation is about 10%. In other words, it could be 16 bushel higher or 16 bushel lower. And when you look at the 350 million bushels, one of the things that we know about corn, because nobody who feeds corn is going to give numbers to the USDA, that the feed and usage and residual is kind of like a miscellaneous category in your accounting. In other words, you can push it one way or the other. And I think what happened with the USDA is they got themselves caught between a rock and a hard place, because we've had issues as far as production goes. And, you know, you can push it one way hoping that the next year it's going to get better. And then when the next year doesn't get better, all of a sudden you find yourself up against a wall. And I think that's kind of where they are right now. It's hard to justify the numbers when you look at how many cattle we're feeding. We don't have a distiller's report, so we don't have good numbers there. And so it just makes it tough, you know, as far as how many times is $350 million going to come back and bite us? The next time that we start to harvest too early, and they don't count that.
Dan Zwicker.
This whole thing kind of started a couple years ago when we had the early harvest.
Right.
And there's a big discrepancy basically on September 1 stocks, whether it was old corn or new corn or both. But I generally think the trade really hasn't recognized that our pipeline is much larger than what the government and what trade wants to talk about. I think the pipeline is closer to monthly usage, and usage is 1.1 billion roughly. And you do bring in some August corn from the south that maybe is 200 million bushels or so. So I think when USDA puts a carryout estimate under 900 million bushels, they're basically telling you that we're in a rationing mode. And that's what happened last year. They kept using a 700 number, or I forget exactly what it was. And I think last year I talked about it here, that I didn't think the carryout could go much under 900 billion bushels. And at the end of the day, where did we end up at?
Last year?
Mm-hmm. About 1-1 or something like that. So I think until the trade recognizes that the pipeline and what's caused that larger pipeline is all of these ethanol plants. They can't count the trucks and the trains that have corn in transit going to all, feeding all these ethanol plants. And I think in some instances we could be using it faster than USDA can count it. So I think that's where a lot of the discrepancy is. And therefore, when I think you look at this year's balance sheet, what do they got carry out at 800 million bushels? I think that tells you that we're in a rationing mode until we see if we get an early planting and how much grain we can pull into this crop year.
Okay. If 1-1 is pipeline, what's the price for corn at 1.1 billion bushels on carryout? If that's all we have left, right?
Well,
you want a month's supply at the end of the year. Is that correct?
For the most part, could go about 200 million less than that, 900 probably.
So 900 million. So at 900 million, are we at 520?
That all depends probably what new crop prospects are at the time at the end of the marketing year.
I mean,
how early harvest.
I mean, under normal conditions, if everything is normal, and who knows what normal is, but I'm trying to get to a normal. 510, 520?
I don't know if you can say that. All I'm saying is that pipeline is larger than what the trade wants to recognize, and until the trade recognizes that pipeline is around 900 million bushels, the market is in a rationing mode. We are in a rationing mode right now. I mean, the basis levels being this strong through the fall, through the winter, and that has bled all the way into the Western Corn Belt, that we're in a rationing mode.
Everybody agrees we're in a rationing mode, right? Okay.
If you look at usage the last couple of years, it's right at 13 billion. If you look 20 years ago, it was 7 billion. So that's what he's talking about. The industry doesn't realize the pipe's bigger.
Right. So the industry wants 1.1 billion bushels every month, regardless, and then you can do the multiplication out and you get what?
Todd, I don't know which of our great panel members mentioned this, but maybe it was my friend Dan here that said the government's going to be very reluctant to push that number much below 800 million.
Yeah, I don't see how they can.
Yeah.
I think even 800 million tells you you're in a quasi-rationing mode, really. So if there's adjustments to be done on supply, I do agree with Paul, is that the ethanol industry is probably the grind is probably a little high there. You could probably see some downward adjustments in the grind. I'm unclear about feed usage. Feed usage just looks too small to me compared to last year and compared to 2 to 3 years ago. Now, there is no doubt about it. The poultry industry has been feeding a lot of wheat, but I'm not sure it's been enough to drop overall feed usage 200 million from a year ago.
So you think in the reports that come in up, you don't think USDA will drop below 800 million then?
If they do, I think if they do, it just tells you that you're in a deeper rationing mode.
Okay. All right. So.
Well, I was just going to say one of the things that I think the trade also doesn't recognize or isn't thinking about is that when you look at the world days of supply for corn, we're down to 52.6 days. And it's not even 60 days beyond September 1st. That's a critical situation. It's a situation. It's the lowest, and they have the lowest stocks to use ratio at the world level that we've had since 81, or prior to 81. And so I think that part of what's going on here too is just, you know, and when you look at 52.6 days, I think that's the thing that is really the key. 52.6 days. Do we have that corn actually available to us or not? We know that China sits on almost half of that by themselves. So is that really available to other countries? Not necessarily. And so I don't think the trade has even taken that into account at this stage. That's just how important it is that we have a good crop this year.
Right. So you're saying that nearly 2 months of supply isn't enough for the
For the world?
No. For the planet.
Right.
Okay. So if we're all equal here, we're all thinking we're in a rationing mode, at least for this year. Then we come to the big numbers that the Ag Forum gave us, the 94 million acres that we talked about earlier, the 164 bushels to the acre. Are those right, in your opinion? And how, if they are, how do they change the landscape? Paul?
He was looking at you, Pete.
Okay.
Pete's really the bad boy. He ought to answer that. But I'll go. I can't.
No. Pete, go on, Pete.
164 is too high. Period.
All right.
Where are we going to get the corn at? Somebody mentioned CPR acres. The Dakotas. What's that grain in? What's the land in the Dakotas or CPR going to make on corn? Put that in with your average. It'll be our average less than last year. And what was it last year? But before you were talking about that, carry over with the 800 million, 6.3% of usage. If you go to 1.7 billion, it's 13%, which is still at the low end of the last 20 years. Mm-hmm. And we're using more of everything. And usage is going to continue to be good, except for a little less ethanol.
One of the beautiful things about this Outlook deal, we have some wonderful guests, and we also interview some wonderful people. And one that Todd gets on the air every once in a while is John Bondurant. He's a very wealthy man, and he owns a lot of farmland, and I get his thing in the office there. And he talks about looking at the August corn basis delivered to Memphis, Tennessee. And he hopes that I think it'll go to 50 or 60 over. Can you imagine? And guess where that corn's going to go? Well, you can rest assured that if it's with a certain company, they've got the option of either going to the Gulf or going right straight up the Illinois Central Railroad to the big power, the big plant in Decatur. So, you know, that early plant and shifting this inventory, it can be done. The 164, Todd, I'm going to be a little bit on the other side of the equation. I think it can be done. And the seed corn companies have made tremendous progress. We've put a lot of drainage tile in the ground. We're hearing about this multiple applications of nitrogen. And it's the best game in town to plant corn for profitability in the corn and soybean belt, you know, the real cash grain areas of the Midwest. So I think it's, you know, the opportunity is there, and I wouldn't even be a bit surprised at some point in time we're going to hit the ball way out of that ballpark, and that's what I think the USDA is looking at.
I think 94 is too low. The corn-soybean ratio hit a five-year low here during the fall and winter months, which is puts corn the most profitable in a five-year cycle over beans. And in the past, you have seen significant jumps in corn acres when the corn-soybean ratio is that low. And I've been to the end of the world this winter. If I'd made one more step, I would have fell off of it. And I can assure you the intentions to plant corn are big. So I wouldn't be a bit surprised to see something in excess of 95 reported. I think upwards of 75% of the nitrogen is on. And unfortunately, very few farmers have anything sold on new crop. So they're kind of hung at the moment. But that doesn't necessarily mean I'm bearish corn. I think we're early in a five-year cycle. I think we can go back and look at 2000 as a five-year cycle low. We can look at 2005 as a cycle low. And I think the June low that we had in 2010 was a five-year cycle low. So we're roughly 20 months into a five-year cycle that I think you could probably go up 30 months in. So I still think 12 can end up being a much stronger year than what a lot of people think. I am not in the $4 camp for fall corn. I know there's a lot of people that would like to see corn go to $4, but I'm not in that camp yet.
Okay, so a couple of things. Cycle bottoms usually come right pretty accurately. If you're on the five-year cycle, Dan taught me this years ago. Five-year cycle, so 05, 10, 15.
Yeah, but so the next note is not due to 15. So I think we got a couple of years to go yet before we get things real bearish in agriculture.
But you also taught me that the tops tend to move
mm-hmm.
within the five-year cycle. So you're of the opinion that this top is actually going to be pretty close to the center?
Well, that's where you start. And then you kind of judge your weather events and the fundamentals from you know, week by week or whatever. But, yeah, I'm convinced that this thing, when I look at the monthly chart, I think we have one more leg up in it. The 2008 leg, 2011 leg, and I think we got either late 12 or 13 leg up. And then we go into a two-year decline.
Okay. And I'll let the rest of you come back in here in a moment, but I need to follow up with him just for a second, because if this is truly the case, and you didn't give us a yield, but if we're at 95 million and say Cooley's right, and USDA is right. Cooley and USDA together, that's kind of tough. Cooley and USDA are right together at 164. That'll give us a really enormous crop, and you must think that there's going to be really enormous demand. Is that right?
We haven't got it grown, have we?
Oh, okay. All right.
I said intentions. Intentions and actuals and harvested are all different.
Supply in the or the demand side in 2012-13 for the new crop. Do you see it staying strong, and what are the pitfalls?
Oh, I think that the opportunity for demand to be very strong is certainly there. Even when we saw the USDA come out with the 94 million acres, they raised the crop production by 2 billion bushels and actually only raised the carryout by 800 million. So they ate up 1.2 billion in demand. I'm in Dan's camp. I really think we could be at 95 or above for this year, especially knowing that last year we actually had 96 million planting intentions. I don't think a lot of people remember that or even realize that. The floods and the flood on the Missouri River took a lot of acres out. And so I think that the intentions are certainly going to be there to do that. Weather's going to dictate what happens. But when you look at demand, what are the pitfalls? If the U.S. dollar, for some reason, would begin to climb, that's certainly not going to make it a good situation for us to be able to move more grain. I think that the Iran situation that was talked about a little bit this morning is much more serious than what a lot of people are giving it. They're just not giving it enough attention. If we start to break down and we start making dividing lines between countries, as far as supporting Iran or doing anything like that. Just to give you somewhat of an idea, you know, right now crude oil in the whole world is priced in U.S. dollars. And as soon as the tension with Iran started, China and India both went to Iran and asked if they could pay for crude oil and gold rather than in U.S. dollars. And so I think that whatever happens over there politically could have a very negative impact on us. We know traders trade based on perception, not necessarily reality. It's always perception. And when you think about that, the perception would not be good if that's what happened. And so I think we're going to continue to see China come in and be a buyer. You know, there too, if we end up with a dividing line because of Iran, China's going to side with Iran in most cases. And so... if they need crop really bad, they'll buy it anyway. It won't make a difference. But at the same time, I think that the outside political forces that we have going on are the political issues in the outside market. This market is much, much bigger than the United States. And so you can't not manage your risk because of the fact that you don't know tomorrow what kind of news you're going to wake up to.
One other bad thing that could happen is the world economy. We haven't talked about it, but Greece was mentioned earlier. The euro and the eurozone, if they don't continue to keep that fairly controlled, we could be back like we were for 6 months. The ugly head would come up, prices would go down. The head wasn't around for a couple days, came back up, prices went back down. So world economy has a lot more to do with our corn prices than what we grow in this state or the next state. I mean, Greece's economy is, I don't think, as big as Illinois, and Illinois is probably about as bankrupt as they are, and nobody talks about Illinois. I mean, literally. So, but the euro is very important to the world. They're China's number one buyer of everything. U.S. is their number two buyer. Europe is the number one buyer, I think, of our stuff. So if Europe goes down and stays down and doesn't crawl back up, it hurts our corn and bean prices.
With the dry, warm weather we've seen through Iowa, eastern Nebraska, southern Minnesota, what do you guys see as the potential to push the corn crop above the 94, 95 million bushels that we talk about planting acres, just with that potential to shift more acres to corn up there?
Down at the Commodity Classic last week, I talked to a lot of Minnesota farmers, and they tell me that the drier it gets in South and North Dakota, the more acres of corn you're going to get, because they're basically going to plant for the crop insurance payment. And if it happens to rain, they hit a home run. They get their 110 bushels. Crop insurance products are not equal from state to state. And there's a big incentive in the West to plant corn for that crop insurance payment. So they tell me, at least visiting with farmers last week down in Nashville, that the drier it gets, the more acres of corn you're going to get in those areas. Now, then the key remains, does moisture come and give them a crop, or do they basically have failed acres and they collect on the crop insurance? But if you look at the preset maps over the past couple of weeks, they are getting some moisture in that area. That area still shows up as the driest area of the Corn Belt, is kind of that northwest third corner of Iowa, southern Minnesota, and then into the Dakotas. but they have gotten some rain in there, so some of that holes are filling up in that area.
Well, let's see, I'm in disagreement about these racehorse hybrids that they got nowadays. I was a DeKalb dealer in the 60s. That's when a bag of seed corn was like about $11 a bag.
Right on your chin.
And we had excellent hybrids from DeKalb. We had workhorse hybrids, and they they had a lot of health, and they had a lot of roots, and they yielded good, but they didn't dry out as good, as they are now. But I think these hybrids that they have now are kind of like racehorse hybrids, and they're kind of sensitive. They suffer when the temperature gets bad. And also, I wanted to bring that up. Now, I hate to bring up this subject, but it's a fact that Jim Ramsey on Channel 9 on the 31st of January, I just happened to be listening. I was in the kitchen. And he said that this is the same kind of winter that we had in 88. And then he said that, that was the year when it was like 100 degrees for over 3 months. And I got to thinking, I said, holy smoke, that's right. And every 24 years, we have a major drought. And that was the 24 years ago. So what do you think about that? If we have a major drought, it's going to be really bad. I hate to bring that up, but you got to be realistic.
Well, Alan Taylor of Iowa State would agree with you. He's been in that camp for 10 years, I think. I do have some sympathy for that argument, especially if you see what the winter pattern has been. The winter pattern has been basically Ohio River Valley and east. And even this storm track that we had this weekend was Ohio River Valley and east. And this is the time of year you should begin to watch for weather pattern shifts. If you don't get one, then maybe this thing continues in the Ohio River and east, and the western Corn Belt begins to get drier and drier and drier. but in 1988, the whole Corn Belt was dry when we came through the winter. That is not necessarily the case. Indiana and Ohio are actually maybe too wet in some areas. For the most part, Illinois has adequate moisture. You could probably argue we could use some more, but it's very adequate. Eastern half of Iowa is very adequate. So, but it wouldn't take long to dry that out if you did get into a very warm, windy type spring. But I always watch the first storm track system of the year, whether or not you want to use this one this past weekend as the storm track that's kind of indicating what kind of spring we're going to have. We'll have to kind of wait and see a couple of weeks on that.
Okay, I want to kind of back up a little bit. We talked a little bit earlier about the usage and how that's calculated. The question I have is, since there is no mechanism to track DDGs replacing feed use, and the way they go about filling in that feed and residual line on the reports, because that's basically, once we get all the other numbers put together, whatever's left goes in feed and residual. How distorted are the usage figures getting because of the DDGs coming out on the market?
Well, I think that, if you back up, Dan talked about that September crop report where we saw that $350 million. And I went to a USDA meeting. They stood right up in front and said feed usage in the residual column is too low. It's about $350 million too low. And that is a result of them being forced to have to balance to whatever the September report says. And so I would have to think that there's probably, a deviation of plus or minus a couple hundred million, and that's probably been the way it's been for a number of years already, and so it's a difficult one. And the other thing we have to really be honest, if we're going to sit out here and we're going to bash the USDA, let's be honest about how many times do we tell them the truth? When you look at it, junk in, junk out. If we don't give them the right numbers, how are they supposed to give us the right numbers back? And I've been in farming all my lifetime, and I'm hard-pressed to find a lot of farmers who tell me they tell the USDA exactly the way it is. And so some of that is, years ago, it wasn't as big a deal because we didn't have the demand base that we have now. It's a big deal now. There's just no question about it. And so I'd like to back up to that other question. I think when you talked about hybrids, that's one of the big issues when you look at being able to reach 164 bushel to the acre is the availability of the good hybrids and how much, the seed companies suffered a lot last year due to the weather, both in South America and here. And so in order to get to 164, we've got to have really good hybrids to produce that. And so I think that's the one argument that a person could use to think that probably wasn't a real number without perfect weather.
I asked one of my large customers that feeds a lot of cattle, I said, just do you feed shell corn anymore? And he said, heavens, no, we don't feed shell corn anymore. They feed silage, and this golden gluten feed is 120% of the value of corn. And I went, wow. The old days of feeding silage and then topping them out, a little more shell corn to get the cattle to market. If he knows it, the Chinese know it, and every other major feed company in the world knows it. So that's possibly one of the reasons why I'm not as critical with those numbers as I was a couple of years ago about this feed usage thing.
I'd like to switch to nitrogen. Dan, I was a little surprised you said you thought 75% of the nitrogen was already on Couple reasons. Louisville Farm Show 3 weeks ago, I was talking to a company that supplies inputs. They said they'd heard total nitrogen sales are actually down 10% from last year. And also, and at least in the places around where we were, the people that put on fall nitrogen, particularly on corn, are the ones that got burned the worst. So I'm a little surprised. I'd just like to hear what the other panelists and you say about that, because those things are kind of conflicting.
I lean a little bit like you, but I think what the real factor here is that there's a tremendous amount of, you know, I drive from Oakland to Oakwood every day, and I try to make 3 to 4 different directions, but almost every inch of that ground is, ready to go. And I do get the feeling there's a lot more spring-applied anhydrous out there. The other thing that and there's this, you know, like in middle part of, the last week of June, so to speak, we try to get that second shot on or do some sort of a high boy to get that little extra push on. But the two things that I want to share with you, there's going to be major, major expansion with new nitrogen plants in the United States with this new low-cost natural gas. They're going to spend billions of dollars on, bringing anhydrous prices down. I think the big factor here is that we're during this little dry spell. Dan works over in Decatur, and he sees all and hears a lot of that big nitrogen application over there in Decatur area, and they really roll, don't they?
I think when you look at the nitrogen application, that is, again, a regional situation. When you talk to some of the guys over in Iowa, that's not necessarily the case, and you certainly get into the Dakotas. So I don't know if 75% is right or not. I think it's probably very right for around this area, perhaps. I think that you have a lot of people who are waiting to see. You know, you talked about corn on corn. Corn on corn has not been a good performer for the last 2 or 3 years. The state with the most corn on corn acres is Iowa, and our guys out in Iowa are saying, we're going to sit back and we're going to wait, and we're going to decide what we want to do based on where the bean price goes. And I think that rather than expand corn acres, a lot of guys are going to try and stay 50-50 unless there's much more advantage to going to more corn acres in Iowa, because corn on corn, 20 to 40 bushel hit, you can't afford to do it with the cost of inputs.
Pete, let's wrap it up. We're going to start with you. We haven't really asked them too much about what they think price is like and whether you should be selling old and or new crop corn at this point. So that's where we're going to go, old and new crop corn sales.
I had a guy this week called me. He said they're paying 28 over on old crop corn. He unloaded every bushel he had. If corn price was 650 something, he was going to get close to 690. I'd be unloading every old crop I had. New crop, I would be looking at buying 550, 560 puts, maybe selling a 7 or a 680 call against it, and waiting to see if we can't get another 20 cents higher in the next 10 days.
Okay. On old crop corn, it just depends upon where you're at. In most cases, I'd have to say that if you can get even to plus basis, I'd be moving old crop corn at this point in time. If you want to take a chance, buy a call. On new crop corn, I've been doing what we call four-way spreads, basically buying 590 puts, selling 2 480 puts, and selling a 630 call, getting it done for around a dime total. And it gives you lots of time to be able to see what this market really wants to do, because we don't know what the weather is. We don't know what acreage is. There are just too many questions out there, but you can't afford to go without having some type of protection.
I didn't quite finish.
He thought of something else.
No. If you've got corn to sell, you grow it to sell. Did you sell any last summer of this year's crop? I've got clients that did. Some elevators would take it, some wouldn't. But I've got guys that sell out 2 years ahead 10 to 20% of their crop when the price is right. They sold over $7 corn last year. So right now, you've still got maybe some 10 corn left. I've got some guys that do. I don't know why. I don't know why they didn't sell 750. You've still got a little last year's corn left? How much of 13 or 14 corn have you sold? If crop prices, due to some weird thing, go back over $7, book some of that too. So I've got guys that have booked 20% of this year's crop last summer before we dove into the lows for Christmas.
I know the hands raised when we had corn. How many people have more than 25% of their crop? Okay, the hands dwindle, don't they?
Yeah, I knew somebody would ask that during the day, and I'd be wrong.
And we got half a year to go, Todd. Do the math.
He's not selling. Not yet. Paul?
Well, there's no doubt about it. The old crop corn is in a world to itself. And one way, of course, is you can be long old crop, short new crop, which I think's prudent. The other factor is that new crop corn, you know, with wheat, world wheat carryover, and the potential of this corn and production agriculture and the farmers' willingness to plant a lot of corn, I am a little bearish new crop corn. And the way I'd protect it on a rally is buy 550 calls and sell $6 calls. It costs you a magic 22 cents. I wouldn't do it one-on-one, but maybe, you know, maybe a fifth of the buyback. And I think it's all said and done, there's going to be a lot of twists and turns on the highway to harvest.
Paul Cooley is with ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois. Jackie Vakes with Stuart Peterson. Pete Manhart with Bates Commodities, and the man who always thinks that I'm bearish, but I like to think of it as conservative, Dan Zwicker with ADM Grain Group out of Decatur. Give them a nice hand for